we start today's episode, just to let you know, you can now nominate for the 2025 Northern Power Women Awards to be in with a chance of celebrating with changemakers, trailblazers and advocates on the 6th of March 2025. Nominate now at wearepower.net.
Power Women Podcast. For your career and your life, no matter what business you're in.
Hello and welcome to the Northern Power Women Podcast. The Northern Power Women Podcast is all about highlighting super fantastic kick-ass role models, hearing about their personal stories, find out about how their career has got to where they've got to, and literally being able to celebrate all of their achievements and also picking up some of their top tips on the way. And this year, as we kind of roll into International Women's Day in March, what we're doing is we're creating a series. We don't want International Women's Day to be about one day. I think often we as women can get pulled in every single direction. So we're creating a series to highlight the amazing role models. And this year, we're looking at female role models across the world of sport, of which there is such an amazing ascendancy of everything going on across every single discipline in sport. So this week, I cannot wait to talk to the wonderful multi-award winning executive with over 20 years experience, though she doesn't look like it at all. Yvonne Harrison, welcome, the chief exec of Women in Football. We've had a good gab before, haven't we? Even got on the air. One of our power list. You've been at Women in Football for the last 2 years. You've got a massive passion about equality, driving that change and literally changing lives through sport. Tell me, welcome. What's it like? How have you been? It's been too long.
I know. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. God, it's a blast from the past on the power list, isn't it? Look at where the awards have got to now. Like, it's amazing to see the growth of your organisation as well, and the wonderful kind of championing you do of women across all walks of life in the North, which is obviously my home, and I'm very passionate about that as well, like you are. Life has been good. 2 years at Women in Football, unbelievable growth. Lots of challenges along the way, as you would imagine, for women working in the industry. But it's a real privilege to lead this organisation and make a difference to the over 9,000 members that we now have. It's super exciting. And I have to say, we have really felt a strong desire from organisations in football to push this agenda forward as well. So that's been really interesting to have some fantastic conversations and see the organisations recognising their role in gender equality in football.
And that's a real key part, isn't it? It's not just about you going, here we go, I'm the chief exec of this organisation, I'm going to make all the change. It's making other people take ownership of that as well, isn't it? It needs that, I suppose, that wider approach, isn't it? It's not just you on your own making all the change.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the diversity is not going to be solved by any one individual, one organisation like ours trying to do that. And I think Women in Football, you know, it was established in 2007 by a group of female journalists who were, quite frankly, you know, had enough of the sexism that existed within their industry. And it sort of evolved over that period. And now it's really an organisation that wants to work with the industry to create the change, because it's everyone's responsibility. And we know that ultimately, if you have more diverse teams and create more inclusive cultures, businesses thrive and everybody wins in that respect.
Let's take you back to where you started at Greater Sport. Is that where your passion of, did you already have the passion for sport, or was it getting into that job that got you the passion around it?
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved sport. I loved playing it at school, right throughout my school life, from primary school into secondary school, played sport, multiple levels. Wasn't like always, I guess when you leave school and you go into uni, you realise like some people are really, really good at it. And I probably wasn't one of them, but at school I was certainly, you know, on all the teams. And I loved everything it gave me, you know, the ability to win, to lose gracefully most of the time, you know, to communicate, to lead people, to understand the dynamics of teams and everything that sort of brought into my career, really, I'll be forever sort of grateful for. But I had that passion. And as I kind of went to uni, I did a leisure management degree at Salford. So it was about as sporty as it got back then, to be honest. And then I just thought, I want to work in the sports industry. And at the time, the Commonwealth Games was coming to Manchester. So as I was studying, like, that was my goal. I want to work on the Commonwealth Games, my home city. How amazing would that be? I did a work placement at Greater Sport as part of my second year, because the Commonwealth Games team weren't ready yet. It was a little bit too soon for them to take on board any kind of work experience. And I'd never heard of this charity before. And it was an unbelievable organisation that was very well connected to all of the national governing bodies, to Sport England. And I thought, if I want to work in sport, like, these people, like, they can really help me. So I sort of took it upon myself when I'd done my 6-week placement to say, look, can I stay? Can I keep coming in? And just I'll do anything, like, whatever you want. So I volunteered for pretty much 18 months as I finished my degree. And then I got offered a job that I went for. I applied for two jobs. And in the same week, I got offered both. One was with Greater Sport. And one was with the Commonwealth Games. And it was like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Big decision time, first big decision really that I'd had to make. And as much as I really wanted to work on the Commonwealth Games, the role that I had wasn't that amazing. And it would have been finished at that point. Now, it could have led to other things, of course it could. But I just thought, I've worked with this organisation. They believe in me. I really respect what they're doing. And I'm going to go with that. And you know, I never look back, because, you know, 15 years later, I left, having been the CEO for 4 years, and made that complete journey from being a volunteer right through. And to this day, you know, when I became CEO, it was one of the proudest days of my life. You know, aside from having my children and all of that, it was just, yeah, I cried. And then I went to bed. I was absolutely exhausted because I put so much in. There's almost an expectation sometimes, I think, if you're in an organization, oh, it's yours, you're going to get that. I was up against people with a lot more experience than me. I'd not been a CEO. I was still a relatively young person in a way. And yeah, super proud, and learned so much with actually working with an unbelievable board who at the time you don't really realise it. Having worked with multiple boards, you kind of go, wow, that was good. And their governance was excellent. And it taught me so much that I've taken forward into, you know, the rest of my career, really.
And I think sport has been, over the decades, always been, has felt like a man's space. But have you seen, during your time at Greater Sport, and obviously now Women in Football, have you seen those pathways and opportunities change? So whether it be coaching, whether it be the wider roles that sit around sport, do you think it's improved?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I certainly, as a younger woman at Greater Sport, when I was going into those committee meetings, or, you know, even boardrooms, sometimes you felt alone. You know, there were, or if there were women there, they were a lot older than you. But I also had great male allies around me. You know, my former CEO, Richard Saunders, the chairman of Greater Sport, Chris Brindley. I mean, just brilliant people who pushed me. And so whilst I recognised that I was different in those rooms, as I grew in my experience, confidence and knowledge, I then sort of found my voice. Like, sometimes I'd be sat there and I'd be thinking of something that I wanted to say, and I didn't say it, and then that man said it, and it was really well received. I think I thought about that an hour ago. Why didn't I just have the voice to be able to sort of bring that to the fore? And yeah, so I think over time, absolutely, there's definitely been more women coming into sport and more women pushing further. And I, you know, we spoke earlier about different people in the industry, and we've sort of all grown up in it together, and that's really nice. But I think there's a real responsibility from certainly a lot of the women that I know as friends and colleagues, that to pave the way and to help other women and young girls and support. And that's where, you know, the work that you do at Northern Power Women, the mentoring, the giving it back, paying it forward, all of that stuff is so, so important. It's something I'm really passionate about, because we have to do that. And we know that, you know, you can see it, you can be it. And that it is in everything. It's officiating, it's coaching, it's boardroom, it, you know, it's marketing, it's HR, it's legal, it's everywhere. And I just get such a buzz from seeing that growth. But there are still challenges. We know from our member survey, there are still a lot of women, only 27% actually, who feel encouraged to kind of forge their way to the highest possible echelons within that football environment. So that's nearly 3/4 of women who don't feel supported in that way. So there's still work to be done, of course, with the glass ceilings. But I think the more women speak about it, the more we're able to celebrate the successes that women are having, the more hopefully it inspires others to think, you know, I can do that. And sport is, it's just an amazing industry. I mean, the highs, the lows, the everything's, you know, you feel really part of something quite special.
And you talked before about like Chris Brindley and some of those, you know, the chair, Richard, and how important is advocacy and allyship? You know, there doesn't go a week or day without there being some kind of an amazing woman in sport getting some trolling or negativity, whether it be on social media or whatever it may be. But there's some great guys out there calling it out. Gary Neville's called it out. Ian Wright called it out, and there's many more out there. How key is that for this change to, I suppose, extinct the dinosaurs?
Yeah. I mean, listen, people have opinions, and that will always exist, and it should exist. I guess the challenge is where people bring those opinions into platforms that incite, you know, other people to kind of then jump in and cause issues and problems. And the allyship is really important, because gender equality is not going to be solved by women. Like, I don't want to speak at a conference about women in football and it's only women, because the people often who are making decisions about the future of the game are men. So it's really important that we have those male advocates. And at Women in Football, we have Ben Carter and Paul Barber on our board. Paul's the CEO of a, you know, Premier League football club. It's really important because they're listened to differently by their peers. You know, when Gary Neville speaks out, he's a great advocate. You know, I've worked for him for a number of years, and I class him as a good friend. You know, it's important because we don't feel isolated. We don't feel, because you can feel quite paranoid about, can I do this? And we know that women do have, you know, a greater degree of imposter syndrome. And it's some of the feedback that we get from females on our leadership course. Confidence is a real challenge sometimes when you're in male dominated environments. You know, you'd be amazed about how many women get asked, you know, do you like football? Do you know the rules? What you work, you know, oh, you must work in the women's game. You know, and our members work right across the industry, both women's and men's football. Obviously most work in men's football because there hasn't been a women's football industry for very long. But we know that women feel you know, held back by their gender. 82% of our members in July said they'd experienced discrimination in the workplace in football, and that's a fact, and that's gone up. Now, arguably, it might have gone up because more women are talking about it and calling it out for what it is. It might also be that the levels are increasing. We don't know the ins and outs of that, but what we do know is that's a very high level of women experiencing discrimination, and we know that sexism is the biggest kind of cause of that. People with, you know, conscious bias, unconscious bias, all of these things are contributing. So that's quite a hard sell, actually, if you think about inviting women to come and join the industry. And isn't this fantastic? What, 82% feel, you know, maybe we don't want to be part of that, but we know that that allyship is crucial in shifting the dial and creating those inclusive cultures where the bants doesn't happen, and where women don't feel marginalized, or where networking events are when women potentially can attend, or at least is a variation. So there is an opportunity to get, you know, amongst other people and not just on a golf course or, you know, in a bar late at night or whatever. And I'm not saying all women have children and all women have caring responsibilities, but all women don't necessarily want to be in some of these environments either, just like some men don't, and non-binary allies. So it's super important that we have people and particularly male colleagues speaking out on our behalf and inviting us into conversations. Is really easy things that men can do to kind of open the door without even really realizing they're doing it. But the difference it makes to people is quite significant.
It's that intentional sponsorship, isn't it? It's not just inviting you into the room. It's putting the chair out, not expecting you to make the tea, to be actually participating. But what part do you think money's got to pay? We know that there's a real disparity, isn't there, between funding between the women's game and the men's game. Can we be hopeful about that changing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've seen the government review on women's football that Karen Carney led, and then we've recently had the government's response to that, and there's a huge amount of work going on behind the scenes now. The professional leagues are coming out of the FA, they're being established into a new co, and that creates huge opportunities for the commercial growth of the game. I think what people are really interested in is how the women's game grows sustainably. You know, there's all been all sorts of challenges, very public in men's football in terms of financial situations of clubs and fair play and things like that. So it's important, really, that as the women's game grows, it does so in a way that it can be solid and have a solid foundation. Some of the recommendations, which were really important, were around kind of wage floors. Because the average salary, I think, in the Barclays WSL is about 27K. Now, if you think about that a year, some players are paid as little as £8,000 a year to play professional football. Show me, you know, male professional footballers really that would accept that. It doesn't really happen. But equally, we have to be realistic that, you know, even your top players are not going to go and get millions and millions and millions of pounds at this stage, because there isn't that money within the women's game. So it's about, you know, what potential we can unlock with the new co, with new broadcast rights deals and things like that. And then that interchangeability between, you know, the club and how it invests in both the women's and men's side of the game, because ultimately women have got a long way to catch up, more than 50 years, because they weren't allowed to play football. So, you know, there is all of this kind of commercial reality. It doesn't happen overnight. What we do know is more commercial partners are interested in getting involved. We know that the fan base of women's football is very different to men's football, and actually has a lot of purchasing power, but really care about the brands that get involved in the women's game. So it presents a huge opportunity for brands to, you know, to position themselves differently and really reap the benefit of those growing audiences and fandom.
And one of the things that came out of last summer and the summer before with the Lionesses Euros win and then the World Cup final last year is the real visibility of those role models and them using that power for good. I was invited to number 10 last year on International Women's Day, obviously because you can only do things about gender equality on one day of the year. But anyway, and I remember seeing you know, Jill Scott and the Lionesses there. And they, what I loved about that was, you know, there was celebration in that, but there was the absolute using their power for good. We're using our power for good here on this day to ask for change and to drive change. That is really powerful for me. And I know we see it across parts of, you know, sort of spots of the men's game and, you know, the likes of your Marcus Rashford's really leaning in and using that power. But the fact that there's that, it feels like it's a collective team. Everyone's into it, aren't they? To really drive that change and taking, that's going to help us take the sport to the next level, isn't it? Surely.
Yeah, definitely. And there is a real sense of community within women's football. I think because there's been so much hardship, because there's been so much to overcome to even be allowed to play. And, you know, we heard as kind of the build up to the Women's Euros, some of the Lionesses talk about the fact they had to pretend to be boys to be played. And then when they got discovered, they were kicked out of the team because the girls were beating the boys, and heaven forbid that would be a thing. So I think they've had to fight really hard. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Karen Carney yesterday at an event that we were doing at Women in Football. And she talked about, you know, the role that everybody's played in getting to that final, you know, over all of those years. So I think the sense of community and the drive from everyone involved in women's football for the whole game to rise. So it's not about Leah Williams or Beth Meads earning the most money and getting the best commercial deals at the cost of other people earning £8,000 a year. Like, they have a responsibility and they absolutely wear it day in, day out to raise the whole standard of the game, whether that's playing standards, whether that's coaching standards, whether that's, you know, the ability for players' voices to be heard. We launched our Open Doors agenda and we had an event at the House of Lords last year around this, because it's almost like when women raise a complaint or an issue, you've got to prove it to the nth degree. We saw what happened at the Women's World Cup with Luis Rubiales. We've seen, you know, that he's kind of sanctions on that. But at the time, it was actually unbelievable to see how sustained the defiance was and this lack of acknowledgement of anything that was wrong. So Open Doors was really about, you know, transparency, good governance, making sure women's voices are heard. And the Lionesses won the Women's Euros. What did they do? Every single girl should have access to football in school if she wants to play it. So what are the schools doing about that? And, you know, we've seen the government respond to certain aspects of that, which is positive, but they'll continue to do that. But it puts a lot of pressure on, actually, you know, not only have they got to play and earn a living and train, they're then, you know, role models, and then they're engaging with the fans, and then they've got potential commercial. Like, it's a lot on the shoulders of the female football players, but they do it brilliantly. And, you know, we just saw Mary Epps win BBC Sports Personality of the Year. You know, she's talked a lot about mental health and being yourself, and really advocated and took on Nike, you know, when they didn't have a shirt. It's like these women are real change makers, and it makes it a real honor to be in the sport and be able to kind of use those examples to show how not only women's football is growing and can improve, but how women's football can be a catalyst for women's sport to be recognized and seen as more professional than perhaps in some instances it is, because it's, you know, it's where it should be.
And what, and this has got to be everything that you've just said there about Mary Epps, about the collective power of the Lionesses, saying, you know, every girl needs access to football. What excites you about the future of women's football and women's sport?
What excites me the most is that when I think, you know, I've got a teenage daughter, and it's the choice that's available to young girls now. You know, that people couldn't have dreamed that it could have been a professional women's footballer. Like, that just wasn't an option, but now it is. You know, people couldn't dream that you could go and run a Premier League football club, but it happens. Now you can. So for me, it's about choice and inspiration and empowerment, and really, you know, for every woman that's working in this industry, that's saying to somebody that's thinking about it or not even thought it's a possibility yet, you can and you will. And that for me is the most exciting thing. It's about how women's sport can change society, can change perceptions on women do this, men do that. Well, no. People talk to me a lot at the moment. There's a narrative that's growing around, well, women's football's growing, and so isn't that amazing? Yes, it is. So women can go and work in women's football and men can work in men's football. And it's like, no, this is about choice. You know, if somebody wants to go and be a physio in the men's game, if they're a great physio, they can go and be physio in the men's game, just like they can in the women's game. Equally, if a man wants to go and coach in the women's game or be the MD or GM of a women's team, go for it. Like, whoever's best positioned for those roles, go for it. But don't take the choice away, because women's football is growing, and therefore we can all be pigeonholed, you know, within that. So for me, the exciting thing is choice and inspiration and empowering people. And that's where, obviously, what we do at Women in Football, it's about creating pathways. It's about providing education. It's absolutely about challenging discrimination, but it's also about celebrating the amazing women that work in the industry with a view that they can kind of pull through others who want to kind of go behind them. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. Obviously, women's football is at such a critical point. It's really on the crest of a wave, and I think there's so many opportunities. Once the new co is established, we can kind of get a real sense of, you know, where that's going to go and what the art of the possible is. But yeah, hugely grateful to the likes of Barclays, who are our lead partner, but they support a huge amount of women's football. And without those early adopter brands coming in, backing it, you know, it wouldn't be where it is today. So yeah, I'm excited for what's next, really. But yeah, for me, it's always about how do we empower and how do we inspire.
And I think it takes us back to exactly where we started. Everyone has a responsibility. Every individual, every parent, every organisation, you know, every leader, amazing leader like yourself. And I feel like it takes back to the 80s. Those who knows who know, they'd like be, you know, choose life, choose sport, choose your path. I can feel it on a tote. Can feel it on a tote bag now. Oh, Yvonne, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you being part of this wider conversation as we talk about the whole rise and ascendancy of the fantastic things that happen across the whole landscape of sport. Thank you so much for joining me, Yvonne.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, and thank all of you for listening. Please do check out our wider series, which has taken us before, during and after International Women's Day. Like we said at the start, this is not just about one day. We want to keep this conversation going. So please join in on all our socials at North Power Women on Twitter and Northern Power Women on all the others, and drop us a line. podcast@northernpowerwomen.com, and stay connected with everything we're doing on our digital hub, wearepower.net. Thank you so much for listening. My name's Simone. This is the Northern Power Women podcast, a What Goes On Media production.